let's talk about is recorded and produced in Treaty 1 territories, on the original lands of the Anishinaabe, Cree, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and on the homeland of the Métis Nation. Thank you very much for listening. Hello and welcome back to Let's Talk About for another episode of Tech Talk. I keep finding things to talk about. I keep finding things to show everyone. And this one is actually quite interesting. Last week we talked about the vacuum tube, train cars using electromagnetics to raise metal pods. In a frictionless environment created through a vacuum tunnel to send passengers through that frictionless environment at about 1,000 kilometers an hour to crisscross the country. And I actually had the privilege of driving across our beautiful country, about halfway across the country, in truth. I was just in Kelowna this past weekend for a wedding. My cousin got married this weekend, and unfortunately, as I think I mentioned on the last episode, our flights got canceled. We had booked flights to and from Kelowna, and our flight to Kelowna had been canceled and then rescheduled to the day we got back. So the plane would fly us effectively, if we were to take these flights, they would fly us from Kelowna to Winnipeg, refuel, turn around, fly us back to Kelowna, which obviously we couldn't do because the wedding was on Saturday and the flight would have been after the wedding. Stupid airlines. So instead, my family packed up and we drove the 22 hours along the Trans-Canada Highway from Winnipeg to Kelowna. Got some nice stops in, got to see, I've been out that way before. I've been as far as Banff, but I got to go a little bit further. I got to see Lake Louise, I got to see Golden, British Columbia, I got to see a bit of Vernon, British Columbia, and obviously Kelowna. I've got family out there, so it was a nice trip, got to see a bunch of people. And my cousin had her wedding, and it was absolutely, absolutely beautiful. But I got really a good experience with cross-country travel, and it put that episode last week into a lot more perspective, how much easier it would have been to just hop into a tube or hop into a little pod with my suitcase and you know, backpack and be flung down a frictionless environment and not have to worry about all of the construction. Because fun fact, there's a lot of construction. There's a stretch of the Trans-Canada Highway that went down to one lane around, I guess when we had just gotten into Alberta. And then there was construction all the way through Calgary, which didn't waylay us too much. They do a great job there of diverting traffic around the freeway system in Calgary. While I'm not a huge fan of freeways and things like that, they did a good job of diverting people around the construction there. What wasn't great was coming back. We went, if anybody's done the drive through the Rocky Mountains down the Trans-Canada Highway, you know how impactful and how just how difficult things get when there are accidents. It's very hard. There are very few, when you're going through the mountains, there are very few alternate routes you have. Through between a lot of the larger stops, there are no alternative routes other than the Trans-Canada Highway. It is the only road in and out as you weave through the mountains. There are some side roads that, you know, can bypass parts of the highway as they go through smaller communities and people's land. But largely, there is only one route to get specifically to that area, basically the area between Golden, BC and Sicamous, BC. There are very few alternate paths to get anywhere else. It's just the Trans-Canada Highway. And you are literally going through parts that are hanging off of mountains, like concrete highways that are suspended off the sides of mountains. So while we were coming back, we got to Sicamous. We drove up north from Kelowna up through Vernon, got to Sicamous, where we were supposed to get from Highway 97A to the Trans-Canada Highway, Highway 1. And as we approached Sicamous, we realized something was wrong. There was a roundabout, and when you're going through Sicamous, if you're trying to go south toward Kelowna, you have to get off of Highway 1, get onto Highway 97A, and that takes you through, you know, Mara and a couple of other smaller communities on your way to Vernon, then on your way to Kelowna. But there's a roundabout just off the road, and or just off Highway 1, to get you into different parts of Sicamous. And we were stuck there for probably an hour, because about 5 minutes down the road, there was a car accident, and that backed up traffic for kilometers. Eventually, we were able to get around and get on a side road that took us basically all the way up from Sicamous to Malakwa, which is pretty far down on the way back to Golden, BC. But it did waylay us for a while, and it was annoying, and it just shows how difficult it is to get anywhere in this country and how precipitous a lot of our cross-country travel can be. The drive was beautiful. It was a lot cheaper than flying, but it did take 22 hours both ways. Spent over a day in the car, which was not fun, but it really showed me that having a system that can get people in bulk, get large numbers of people to and from different parts of the country in minutes to a couple hours, you know, being able to do the journey from Winnipeg to Kelowna in a couple hours versus a full day would be very, very nice, be preferable. It would be nice to be able to have time to hang out and spend time with my family out there, because, you know, our family is spread out across different parts of the country, and really the only times we get together are when someone gets married or someone dies, because it's so hard. My family is here in Winnipeg, where kind of the family started, and everyone's dispersed mostly to BC, but also to Ontario. So it would be really nice to have that. That said, that's not what this episode is about. That's just me on a little diatribe here. This is something that I heard about when I was on the drive home. This was sent to me, and shout out Sharon Caseberg for sending this to me. This is a unique piece of technology, and this is an article in Interesting Engineering. The title is "Transparent Solar Panels Could Replace Windows in the Future. Here's How." It's from Daria Ozdemir, and it was published way back in April of 2022, so a couple months ago. So one of the unique things about living in an era where we are starting to embrace green technology are seeing the ways that we are able to fold in this technology into pre-existing infrastructure or in or just make slight modifications to the way we live our lives that makes things a little bit easier. When you're in BC, you're going up and down hills and you'll often see Teslas. They do have a lot of charging stations, but you'll see a lot of electric vehicles. Because you're going up and down hills, you're able to actually charge your battery while going downhill, which makes it more makes it easier and more efficient to drive an electric vehicle in a place like BC. In my book, I talk about the concept of solar roads, which is basically making exchanging our roads and highways for a silicone-like material. And effectively embedding solar panels into the roads, which means the roads, they sit there, they are on top of, you know, they're sitting there exposed to the sun all day. And that is a way that we can build roads in a softer material, a different material that can be produced fairly easily and is quite plentiful. And has the dual ability to actually power a lot of the things around it, a lot of the streetlights, a lot of the buildings, generating solar electricity through the roadways. Previous episodes have talked about phase shifting materials for roofing to insulate your home better, to save on energy costs, implementing different carbon recapture technology in order to have something that sits next to your air conditioner that passively collects carbon from the atmosphere and that you can then monetize by selling that into the circular carbon economy. But this is a different one. So this is making solar panels that are in effect transparent out of glass or using the energy and the heat stored in glass, converting it into electricity. So what the article asks is, could we really generate electricity from windows in offices, homes, cars, sunroofs, or even smartphones? So direct from the article, transparent solar is a cutting-edge technology that gathers and uses light energy through windows or any glass surface, regardless of the angle. It has the potential to be a game changer in terms of broadening the scope of solar. In terms of engineering, researchers have created several means of transparent solar technology. Most generally, though, the majority of them function more as a transparent solar concentrator, which means they are made to absorb specific UV and infrared light wavelengths that aren't visible to the naked eye and transform them into energy capable of powering electronics. This technology is also called photovoltaic glass and is manufactured to provide a ranging level of transparency. Back in 2014, researchers at Michigan State University developed an entirely transparent solar concentrator, which could convert almost any glass sheet or window into a photovoltaic cell. If you remember back to the discussion on solar panels a few weeks ago, photovoltaic cells are the pieces that actually collect the radiation and the heat energy from the sun and converts it into energy, commonly made out of silicone. Back to the article, and by 2020, scientists in the United States and Europe have achieved 100% transparency for solar glass, bringing us one step closer to the goal of a sustainable future that does not rely on the grid of the fossil fuel industry. So what are the benefits? See-through solar panels are incredibly important, as in modern society, glass is practically everywhere. Ranging from the screen of your phone to skyscrapers, it's estimated that there are 5 to 7 billion square meters of glass surfaces in the United States. Imagine the sheer amounts of electricity that could be generated if we could tap into that power. With that in mind, it should be noted that conventional solar panels necessitate a wide setup area as well as significant initial cost. Because of these constraints, it is difficult to implement them in metropolitan locations. Transparent solar panels, on the other hand, can be implemented in these areas, paving the way for net zero energy buildings and help cities meet climate goals and targets. That is quite true. One of the problems that has bogged down our transition to green energy has been the startup cost, the overhead of actually implementing these technological or these green energy advancements. because you need to be able to produce enough silicone and manufacture solar panels, which is a highly complex and technical, has in the past been highly complex and technical. Nowadays, we have 3D printing technology. We have means to make this a little bit more efficient, which has, you know, lowered the cost a lot, we've found alternatives to silicone, which is further lowering the costs and improving the bottlenecks that have existed in the solar panel industry for a very long time. And actually, I talked about that on a previous episode about the bottleneck due to shortages of silicone and the alternatives that have been found. And then also with things like wind turbines, they are massive pieces that need to be made from specific materials, need to be manufactured, transported, set up, engineered, and maintained, which takes a lot of money up front. Whereas we've already put in the cost and put in the money and have, you know, through the market, have brought down the initial overhead cost or the continued cost of mining coal and collecting fossil fuels. So this is a great way to replace those large solar farms or to supplement those large solar farms by literally having our homes and offices wired up to convert with this photovoltaic glass to passively collect sunlight throughout the day, store it in batteries, or just pump it directly into the grid. This would be able to reduce the cost that people have, the power costs that people have, because you'd be able to implement these yourself, and you'd be able to power your own home with this photovoltaic glass, and that would reduce your energy costs and the energy demand of your home, like with people who have wind turbines and who have solar panels on their roofs. And same thing with offices, you'd be able to reduce your CapEx cost and your operational costs for running your office building with the power that you require by just implementing or installing at a relative lower cost of photovoltaic glass. You need windows, so just swap them out for photovoltaic glass and you're well on your way to generating your own energy. And it's one of those other pieces when I've talked about previously about these just passive small little changes that are going to make a world of difference as we move towards a green future. We're going to have to figure out options that are passive, that are small little things that you're not going to notice after a few years. You know, it's going to be a certain charge. You know, eventually photovoltaic glass is going to be the standard when you are replacing windows in homes or you're building new homes. You're going to have to get photovoltaic glass. You're going to have to get, you know, you could pay a little bit extra, get photovoltaic glass. You could pay a little bit extra and have the phase shifting roof tiles that will save you money in the long run. And that can be written into bylaws, can be made standard across the country to say, hey, all of the windows in new constructions are going to have to be photovoltaic glass. All the new constructions are going to have phase shifting materials on the roofs. All future constructions are going to have a carbon recapture system built into on the roof or outside the home, somewhere on these buildings. These are small little things that make a slight increase in, could, especially in the beginning, have an increase in price. But as we start to implement those costs or have those implemented and are able to reduce those costs over time through innovation and through new technology and through the market, able to bring that cost down and be able to spread that technology out and make it just ubiquitous to everyday existence. So back to the article, the future of high-tech windows. And that's just not on paper, as transparent solar technologies are already popping up around the world. For example, the Copenhagen International School's design utilizes 12,000 hued but clear solar panels all over the building, producing 200 megawatts of energy annually. That's apparently more than half the energy the building consumes, which is pretty great. They get to save on half. They get to cut their energy costs in half. In another example that took place last year, the Biomedical and Physical Sciences building on the campus of Michigan State University was upgraded with the installation of 100 square feet transparent solar glass panels, which were situated above the building's entryway. they will generate enough electricity to power the lighting in its atrium. I want to back up for a second, because I just know people are going to look at that Copenhagen example and be like, how am I going to put 12,000 solar panels on, you know, clear solar panels on my house to save that cost? You don't need to, because your power demands are different. I'm just going to throw that out there. The power demand, the amount of power that is needed to keep the lights on at the Copenhagen International School is a lot more than your house. You're not going to need 12,000 of these panels or 12,000 pieces of photovoltaic glass to cut your costs in half. You're probably just going to have to swap out the windows in your home. Look at however many windows you have in your house. Swap all those out, and you're probably going to be able to cut down on that energy cost. So just for argument's sake, I did the quick math, and each of those individual, the power demand is going to change based on the different pieces of glass, because each is going to have a different amount of sunlight. It's going to have different sun at different points in the year. It's going to have different angles. It means it's going to capture different amounts of UV light. But still, if all things are held constant, each of those individual piece of that glass will produce 0.01 megawatt hours of energy annually. So for a house of, say, I'm just trying to think of how many windows my parents' house has. There are 15 individual pieces of glass in their windows. So if, you know, that means, so let's just do the quick math here. That times 15 is 0.025 megawatt hours of energy annually. And just according to some quick research that I've done, the average Canadian household requires 1,090 kilowatt hours per year to keep to just generally the power demand. That converts to 1.09 megawatt hours. So with these glasses, say if my parents' house requires the average amount of a Canadian household, which is 1.1 megawatt hours, there's effectively nearly a quarter of that can be kept up, can be covered by switching every pane of glass to photovoltaic glass and having it generate that energy itself, which is incredible, really. You know, I'm pretty sure my parents would love to have their power bill reduced by a quarter. That'd be pretty great. Yeah, but so the average house, the average Canadian household would see their power bill cut by 25%, because they would be able to effectively cover most of their power needs. And obviously that would change depending on how many pieces of glass you have, how many windows you have in your house. But generally, the larger your house, the more glass you require, the more windows you're going to have. And then the more you're going to have, you know, power you're going to need because you have a bigger house. So just the final part of the article. However, there are some obstacles standing in the way. Before the technology can be scaled up, scientists need to up its efficiency, as there is an efficiency transparency trade-off. The more transparent the panel is, the less effective it is, which is why see-through panels are not expected to exceed or replace the standard solar panels we've grown accustomed to. Either way, the technology could potentially help humanity get to a truly sustainable and greener future faster. And that's all we're asking. If you think about how many different options we could have to start transitioning to a greener economy or reducing our carbon footprint, these are all things that, when put into totality, they are small little changes. It's, you know, you're not going to notice a difference in your window. Even if you do, you're not going to notice it after a while. You're not going to notice the difference of the material that your roof is made out of. You're not going to notice the Climeworks pods are effectively the size of a small or a fairly large air conditioner, but you're not really going to notice that too much. It's these small little changes that add up. as I've said repeatedly on this show, these are the things that are going to, we're not asking for like a multi-billion dollar change, like building this, the what I talked about last week with the vacuum tubes and having these sealed environments where cars are going to be traveling, hurtling down from place to place in a matter of, you know, hours, going 1,000 kilometers an hour following the Trans-Canada Highway. We're not going to, it's not a cost like that. That's a significant cost that's going to, in the long, even in the short term, once it's done, save lots of money. It's going to generate a lot of revenue, and it's going to, you know, make a significant impact in people's lives. But it's small changes like this, like the transparent material, the transparent glass, we've been talking about the photovoltaic glass. These are small changes that are in the long run going to make a ton of difference, because you're able to slice up, like the example of my parents' house. Even though 99% of power in Manitoba comes from renewable sources, it's effectively, it's significantly less in other provinces. I think it's 11% in Alberta comes from renewable resources. If all the houses are generating a quarter of their power independently, you don't have to pay a company, you know, you just install this glass and a quarter of your electrical bill every year is skimmed off because you're producing it yourself and you don't have to worry about the power company. You don't have to worry about, you know, what they're doing or what they're charging you. You're going to be able to do it yourself. That's going to make a huge difference for a lot of people. It's going to make power a lot cheaper for people because you're able to take a chunk of that cost and just do it yourself, and do it green and do it in a way that, you know, it doesn't disappear. You know, you don't move to a different house and lose that. If all houses eventually have this photovoltaic glass, it doesn't matter where you go, you're going to have it. You know, you could even have companies providing this as a service, power companies providing this as a service. You want to keep it in that market. It's just these small little changes that are going to make a world of difference, because, you know, in a place like Alberta, where 11% roughly of their power comes from renewable resources, you're going to be bumping up that number. You know, you're going to be relying less on oil and gas. Then more of that is going to be turned into straight up revenue going out of the province, or coming in from outside the province, I should say. And you're going to be raising the amount. You're going to be lowering the cost to average Albertans or Saskatchewanians or people from Ontario, like Ontarians, Quebecers. You're going to be lowering those costs for them while increasing, like lowering the overhead on their bills and raising the amount of green energy that is produced or renewable resources that are used. And it's going to make a difference. It's these small little things that we need that are going to be so, so important as we move towards our green future. All right, so that will do it for me today. I got about a minute left. Thank you very, very much for listening. This has been Tech Talk. Tech Talk on Let's Talk About. I've been Jason. You've been the audience. You're listening live on 101.5 UMFM. Keep that dial on 101.5. You've got great songs, great shows coming up right after this one. And if you're listening on Spotify, thank you very, very, very much for your download. Like, share, follow, do all those really cool things that help the show grow. You can catch me this Thursday on The Hockey Show with Teebs, 5:30 to 6:30. We're going to have a lot to talk about. It's going to be a great, great show. And I guess the only other announcement, Evan and I will be back as the voices of Bison men's hockey this upcoming season. It's going to be great. It's going to be a lot of fun. So stay tuned for more news about that. Once again, thank you very, very much. Have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful week. Stay safe, everyone.